Blog Talk Radio.
GoDamnMedia.com.
And good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Carol Fritzy. I hope you're enjoying your day. We're getting more rain, but that's okay. We need it. My garden looks like a jungle. I love it, though. I want to talk to you about something I brought up on my show on Friday. The Boston Bomber Rolling Stone magazine cover, and how I was defending my right to be critical of it despite not reading the article. Well, I read the article. I read it over the weekend. And it just reinforced my points that I made on my Friday show about their decision to use that picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone magazine. This article is yet again nothing more than, I don't know how to even describe this article, ladies and gentlemen. You'll have to go in and read it yourselves to make up your own minds, but I thought it was nothing more than another apology piece for Islamists. What they essentially did is they touched on his background, his upbringing, his viewpoints, what he thought about America, what he thought about 9/11. But it was more or less almost an apology for him on his behalf is what it was. That's how I saw it. They have passages in here such as his father was abusive, how his father would literally, you know, drive him to excel in school, all right? How his parents never showed up at his boxing or wrestling matches, all right? How he felt disenfranchised, all right? Like I say, Islam is a religion for losers, and he was certainly one of them. What compelled him to do what he did in April of 2013 in Boston, Massachusetts, has nothing to do with him being exemplary from any other person who might have a few life issues. I stand by what I said on Friday. There is no excuse for what he did. He did what he did because that is Islam. That is what Islam does. Islam is not a religion of peace. Islam in Arabic is submission. Islam is about caliphate. Islam is about war, the subjugation of women, Sharia law. He was simply following his religion, which I call a cult, by the way, as you know. So I actually walked away from this article with more disdain than I did before reading it. Like, it's unbelievable. And the thing is, there are a lot of people cited in this article who should have figured out that their little friend was slowly going Islamo-crazy. In this article, they interview a person named Will, which is not his real name. He said that Jahar, or the Joker, was fairly apolitical. But they were having a conversation one day, and he did the conversation turned to terrorism. And he did kind of exude that he thought terrorism was justified. There you go, a red flag. Now, in the Book of Professionals, that sort of thing is called leakage. When you have a leak like that, you try to plug it up. But they didn't. Will went on to say that he did have a political opinion. He never expressed that he was pro-terrorism, but he kind of did. One time to me, he did express that he thought acts of terrorism were justified. It was around their junior year in college. They had been eating at a neighborhood joint, and they were talking about religion. A friend, there were two of them amongst them, another one was Sam. Joker, he opened up about Islam. He confided his hatred of people whose ignorance equated Islam with terrorism, defending it as a religion of peace and describing jihad as a personal struggle. Excuse me.
What?
And nothing more. Sorry about that. This time, Will said, I remember telling him I thought certain aspects of religion were harmful, and I brought up the 9/11 attacks. At which point, Jahar told him he didn't want to talk about it anymore, but Will pressed him. He asked why, and he said, well, you're not going to like my views. So Will pressed him even more. And he said he felt some of these acts were justified because of what the U.S. does in other countries and that they do it so frequently, dropping bombs all the time. Now, we saw that in his scribbled manifesto on that boat in which he was finally captured, about how evil Americans were killing his people in Iraq and Afghanistan. But I'm telling you, this conversation took place long before the Boston bombings. I would think that these individuals would recognize that as a leakage. That's what profilers call it. It's a tiny crack in an otherwise carefully crafted facade. It usually provides the key to a person's interior world in a lot of cases. Leakage, a tiny crack in an otherwise carefully crafted facade that was exposed but was not treated. We know what happened when that leakage was not treated. It spilled. It broke. The dam broke. And three people and hundreds of others were maimed. Three in particular killed. They talk about the older brother. Don't really care much about him. I don't even like saying his name. I guess for edification I will, though. The older brother, Tamerlan, he's the one who died. He's the he's Mama's little martyr son. He was very devout, and they do relate that in the article, but we knew that already. Now, you're going to hear, like, well, you have heard how it was Tamerlan who led the Joker down the garden path into a state of terrorism. I think it was the other way around. But I don't know. The Joker, he was a real party boy. He liked the ladies. He was polite around them because he was a good Muslim. But this guy smoked pot like you wouldn't believe. So maybe drugs had something to do with furthering his spiral into Islamosanity. Who knows? But like I say, in reading this article, I find nothing in here that would make me change my mind about their decision to use that picture on the cover. Nothing. If anything, it reinforces my opinion. It should not have been done. Now, if you go up and look at the slides above the show notes, I have a picture in there of the Joker. That's the one that the Rolling Stones should have put on their cover. But what can I say? This is capitalism. In itself. I can imagine that Rolling Stone magazine has gotten more hits than ever because of this. So, wow, Rolling Stone magazine, congratulations to you. I was one of them that hit you. I said on Friday that I was not going to read the article. However, I was getting a little badgered about it. If you're going to argue about freedom of speech and expression, which I do support, by the way. You guys know that. At least read the article. As of Friday, I had not read the article. I finally caved, and I went in, and I read it. It's 5 pages long. It's pretty dense. But like I say, I'm glad now I did read the article, because at least now I can come back to you and tell you that I am so firmly beside my opinion as of Friday, because I did read the article, and I don't like it, and I still don't like him on the cover of that magazine. So I read the article, and I look at the cover of the magazine, and I see nothing but sympathy for this terrorist. Sympathy. And yes, that is a photoshopped picture they have. I saw the original. I told you this on Friday. People are saying, no, it was taken from his Facebook page and this and that. No, I saw the original photo. I saw the police handout that they had. That was not the same photo. So, like I say, I'm done with it. Rolling Stone magazine, I hope you lose subscribers. But in this capitalistic society that we live in, you had every right to put whatever you want on your cover. Every single right. But I still don't like it. It glorifies him. Oh, and by the way, Rolling Stone magazine, that little terrorist, he's getting more fan mail and more marriage proposals. And more young girls walking around with his face on a t-shirt. I bet you in Chechnya, I bet they're having little parties, little celebrations, that one of their brothers made it in America. Well, boy, the fireworks must just be flying over there. Mama is a little celebrity in her own right. You've seen her, of course, in the media. Now, she's a Muslima, for sure. And Islamist, definitely. But I personally think she's also just simply barking mad. The way she conducts herself in front of the camera. How she rallies, her little fist pumping, her strident voice. My poor son. But she's proud of the older one. He died. Yeah, he's a martyr. There's a word for that, for mothers. I don't know where I put it. I wrote it down a long time ago, and I doubt I can find it again. I give up. It doesn't matter. So as far as I'm concerned, Rolling Stone magazine, I still think you jumped the shark. And this article is abysmal. All you do is talk about his past. Which wasn't really that troubled. He had a strict father and a religious mother. Unbelievable. Like I say, though. Okay, I'm going to move on now. I got that out of my system. I just wanted to share that with you. Want to talk about Ramadan in a minute? It's really not the most peaceful holiday. In fact, a lot of crime, more crime, in fact, occurs during the month of Ramadan than any other time in the Muslim world. And by the way, Ramadan started on July 9th, and it will end the 7th of August. And I'll tell you why you should watch for suspicious behavior in your city parks in a minute. But I want to do something right now. Now, on Friday, I played a clip by Wild Bill for America. There's a lot of issues going on in Spain right now. Spain in particular. Spain is not exclusive to this problem. But Spain in particular is seeing quite a surge in their dogs being poisoned and people going out and taking walks and being assaulted by Muslim youth. Wild Bill, he explains it here. Let me bring him up.
We've got to stop thinking.
Oh, for goodness sake, I got myself a pop-up. Sorry about that. Here we go.
Man, if there is one thing that makes Americans fighting mad, it is cruelty to animals, especially to the ones we accept into our homes as beloved pets. Well, guess what's coming to America? Jihad against pet dogs. Muhammad, the inventor of Islam, taught that dogs were unclean and often had them killed on sight, especially black dogs. So guess what that means for dogs today? In every nation where Muslims become more than 6% of the populace, they begin to force their rules on everybody. In European nations that have allowed unrestricted Muslim immigration, people are finding pet dogs dying in agony with foam pouring from their mouths because they've been poisoned. People walking their dogs are being attacked by Muslims, and both the people and the dogs brutally beaten. On July 29th in San Lorenzo, Spain, a young man and his mother were walking their dog after being warned the day before by Muslim neighbors not to walk that impure animal. The next day, about 50 Muslims were waiting for them and attacked, nearly killing the mother and the dog. Two police officers tried to help them and were also attacked by the mob. More police arrived and a standoff ensued. The Muslims raged and threatened to slit throats. Is this really what we want in America? Every nation that allows unrestricted Islamic immigration gets the exact same crime wave. Every time, the evidence is overwhelming. Spain, France, Norway, the Netherlands, the Philippines, Indonesia, Australia, England, they are all seeing the exact same problems being forced on their citizens by Islamic immigrants. Muslim immigrants are always nice and polite until they grow in numbers. The United States needs to consider immigration control as part of an anti-terrorism plan. Want to avoid dead dog jihad in America? Do not allow Islamic ghettos to form. Now, to those who say this video is racist, I say take your race card and shove it. The issue here is violent crime and cruelty to animals. And I have a message for the Muslims of the world. Dogs are God's four-legged goodwill ambassadors. They are often the best companion a child can have, and there is no animal that demonstrates unconditional love like a dog. And from what I can tell, that is a concept that Islam needs to learn. This is Wild Bill for America. Thank you for watching, and America, bless God again.
And like I say, that was Wild Bill for America. You can find all of his fine videos on YouTube. A wonderful patriot American. Wild Bill, I have a bit of a crush on you. You want to come on my show one day? All right. Okay, back to the show. That's enough, Kel. But it's true. What he says is true. And I bring this up because there is, we are having issues about dogs being attacked by Muslims, not only in Spain, as was highlighted in Wild Bill's video and in my opening remarks. It's happening in the United States, and it's also happening in Canada. Now, I have a very good friend of mine. He is a well-renowned blogger. His blog is a household name, but I'm not going to tell you who it is because this is a story he's still working on, and I don't want to give it away. But there was an issue in Ottawa, Ontario, not too long ago, where a man was walking his dog, and he was harassed by a group of Muslims. In Canada. And he literally picked up his dog and fled because they were so menacing. Spain, however, they are reaching gigantic proportions of this phenomena. I kid you not. As Wild Bill alluded to in his fine clip there, last year, there was a 27-year-old man. He took his three dogs for a walk with his 49-year-old mother, and they were attacked by a mob of 25 to 30 Muslims from North Africa. The man said, "We were there with the dogs, and suddenly loads of Muslims appeared." The mother said, "They hit my son a lot, and they shook me. Now, the police were called, but the Muslims attacked the police as well. Reinforcements had to be called in. Now, eventually, the police, they managed to get the family into a doorway, and they were able to protect them there. But there are photos accompanying this article I'm relating to you, and it's horrifying, some of the pictures. You can find this article at Bare Naked Islam, in fact. Go and find it there. Just Google Bare Naked Islam. Apparently poisoning dogs in Spain isn't enough. And it'll be right there. Oh, man. There is a jihad on dogs. Islamic jihad on dogs, yeah. And like Wild Bill said, these are our four-legged friends sent from heaven. There was one Muslim who said, "I'll kill your dog, I'll kill your dog, and the whole family." These two people, the 27-year-old son with his 49-year-old mother, she said, "All of them were punching and kicking us. They were choking my son. All of this is scratched, the arms, the legs, and they were shaking me from all sides." She felt as though her skin was burning. Like I say, though, not just in Spain, and apparently not just in Canada. In Europe, Muslims have declared jihad on all dogs. In Iran, people are arrested because they're walking their pet dogs in public. In the United Kingdom, a Muslim beats the crap out of a sweet Labrador puppy. Yeah, his own dog. Dogs are being poisoned in Britain as well. And I have mentioned Spain. In Turkey, there is a genocide on dogs. In Maryland, in the United States, a Muslim man was charged with killing his stepdaughter and their dog, her dog. In the United Kingdom again, a Muslim cut off the ears of his girlfriend's puppy. In the UK, there was a man. He was blind. He had a seeing eye dog. He never had problems boarding the bus in the past until this occurred. He is a resident of Luton in England. And when he went to board the bus with his seeing eye dog, there were a couple of Muslimas on there, and they started screaming. So the bus driver refused him to come on the bus because he was scaring the Muslimas. That man is blind. That dog, those are his eyes. He never, ever had an issue boarding that bus until the Muslimas came along. That man had an appointment at a hospital that day, which he missed because he was refused entry on the bus because it would offend the screaming Muslimas. Pardon me while I clear my throat. Australia? This is cute. In Australia, a taxi driver told a blind woman to put her guide dog in the trunk of the car. Yeah. A taxi driver. Yeah. Telling a blind woman to put her eyes in the trunk of the taxi. Give me a break. These stories go on and on and on. It is so easy to find them. It is so easy to research any aspect of Islam. This is just one of them I'm sharing with you. Jihad on your dog. Lovely people, aren't they? Now, I'm going to move on, and I'm just bringing up my notes here, so please, bear with me. I did have something here I wanted to share with you, and it's actually going back to yours truly, the Joker. I forgot about it. I had it right in front of me, and I moved it around to grab for something else, and I put it aside, and I forgot to bring it back, and I looked over, and it's like, oh, there it is. It's like, oh, for goodness sake. You guys are going to think I'm really all over the map, but you know what? That's okay, because you know I always am. But like I say, to back up what I was saying about the Rolling Stone cover, there was an excellent article in the National Post on the weekend by Rex Murphy. Rex Murphy is a Canadian national treasure, one of the finest journalists I've ever had the pleasure to read. I've yet to meet him. I will one day. I'm a real news junkie, and I go out of my way to try to meet my heroes in the media. I've met Michael Corrin, Ezra Levant, some very fine people. I've spoken with Margaret Wente. I've had conversations with Kathy Schadl. We have very fine journalists up here in Canada. Rex Murphy is definitely one of them. Now, he wrote this article called The Terrorist as a Teen Idol, and he's right. And you know what? I'm not going to read it verbatim, but I'm going to read you just a few passages from this article. And what I'll do is later on today, I will put it in my blog, so you can go to my blog after 4:35 o'clock today, and you can find it at theredfoxblogger.blogspot.com, and I'll have it there for you. But he is a prolific writer. I just love this man. He goes on to say, the high priests of science insist that humankind cannot create an absolute vacuum. But this determination was made before the rise to fame of Jerry Springer, Oprah Winfrey, Paris Hilton, Keith Olbermann, and Kim Kardashian. Somehow our society has produced a pop culture whose perfect absolute vacuity transcends the law of physics. There you go. There's more in this article. I'm just going down it. There are some passages in this article that I just love. He's right about one thing. Sometimes the Rolling Stone magazine, they do have pandemic articles, which are interesting, informative, insightful. However, this one isn't. Anything new. They're lengthy, like the New Yorker type lengthiness that you get. It takes you half an hour to get through the article, which sometimes is wonderful. It's like reading a short book, which I love doing. But this article in particular, and Rex Murphy has my back on this one. He agrees. It's just nothing more than an apology piece. Rex Murphy, though, he does bring up another great point in that he says it is not just Rolling Stone magazine. It's a whole industry in America and the West, I will add, that is predicated on the mocking of America, on blistering its core values, and not just mocking America but the West. It outrages its decencies and firebombings is its core sensibilities. The free riders of American culture, amongst which I would emphatically place Rolling Stone, have no problem with playing the outrage game, posturing as critics while they rake in the cash and enjoy all the liberties and range that their country allows them. Now, of course, now we are concentrating on the United States. I tried to dance around that particular comment a little bit. Don't know if I was successful. But it's not just the United States. We know that. It's the entire West. We are, unfortunately, in a position sometimes where we do engage in self-mocking and we do not appreciate ourselves and we do not seem to remember that we have a core value and we have decency and we have respect. Rolling Stone magazine certainly has no problem exploiting those values to their end. Just makes me really, really upset, this sort of stuff that goes on. I think I had a clip in here. I'm not too sure. Like I say, I've got things jumping around all over my desk. Oh, and I've got a kitty cat here. Hi, Freya. Hi. Want to say hi to the listeners? Oh, hang on. She wants her food. You want your food? Is this what you're here for? All right. This is very unprofessional of me. She's sitting there, and if I don't give her her food, she'll start meowing. She won't go away. There you go. Go eat. Leave Mama alone. Okay, I'm back. Like I say, not very professional, but hey, what can you do? When you have a cat around you, yeah, you just got to love them. Like I love my dog, Jihadis. That's right. Pets are wonderful things. Jihadis. Leave our pets alone. Okay, now I am done with the Rolling Stone topic. All right. And the cat is getting fed. I did want to talk to you, of course, about Ram-a-lam-a ding-dong, it is that wonderful time of the year. Yeah, like I say, Ram-a-lam-a ding-dong will be gracing us until the 7th of August. Be careful out there in your parks. I have related this story numerous times, and you who are my regular listeners, you're probably going to plug your ears and go, oh, here she goes again with this story. But just for your edification, I want to reiterate why it's important to share it again, is that we have an issue here in Canada. It was in Mississauga, Toronto, around there, the GTA area. At the end of Ramadan, these two Muslims took it upon themselves to take a goat to a city park to slaughter it to celebrate the end of Ramadan. Yeah, they were caught. The police came up. What the hell are you doing? It's the end of Ramadan, man. Now, you're not allowed to do that in a park. Well, it's our religion. Well, they were, of course, they were fined. Don't know if they faced jail time. Don't know what the outcome of that was, but if you Google it, I'm sure you'll find it. Try to Google it in the Toronto Sun, because that's where I read it. So, yeah, on the evening of August 7th, yeah, just take a stroll through your park. With your dog. See what you see. I'm going to delve further into detail about the Ram-a-lam-a ding-dong holiday. But I'm going to take a break for a minute. Because like I say, I've got a cat down here. And she's like, what do you want now? Well, she's staring at me. All right. I'm going to take a little bit of a break. I do, however, want to share something with you, is that if I sound kind of funny, it's because I have new teeth and I'm getting used to them. I have to learn to speak all over again. so I can very much easily sound like this, very easily. And something's going on here. I'm getting a lot of bleeps in my computer. Somebody's emailing me. So just to clear that up, no, I don't drink. I was accused of that. No, I do not drink. I certainly do not drink at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I certainly don't drink when I am conducting a program. No. No, no, no. I may be unprofessional when I'm feeding my cat, but to drink while you're on the air is absolutely abysmal in my eye. I do not do that sort of thing. I just sound really funny when I pronounce certain words. That's all. But for, you know, I wasn't seriously, you know, confronted, you know, with that. They were just teasing me. I mean, they're fine people. It was funny, but no, I don't. I promise you. Oh boy, oh boy. I did get a little testy about it, though. It's like, you know, you can't be saying that. It's kind of rude. But, well, it is what it is. Anyway, I better shut up about it before I lose total credibility here. I'm going to play this song. I've not played it for quite a while now. It's a great song. It's called I Don't Care by Apocalyptia. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll be back in 3 minutes.
I try to make it through my life in my way. There's you. I try to make it through these lies, and that's all I do. Just don't deny it. Don't try to fight this and deal with it. And that's just part of it.
And welcome back to the Red Fox Blogger with Kel Fritzy here. Yeah, I like that song. I dedicate that to all my fabulous Islamofascists out there. Happy Ramadan! Now, getting back to the topic at hand, which I did want to bring up, is the issue of Ramadan. This religion is, well, you know, this cult, this holiday, I suppose, a month-long holiday. It is not as peaceful as you would think. As a matter of fact, it creates more problems than anything. Now, there's a lot of people out there that say, well, Ramadan, it brings on the human spirit, collectivity. It's supposed to be about alms and giving, but it doesn't. They really don't care about the charity, of engaging in charity of those less fortunate. This is the whole idea behind it. And a gnat just flew in my mouth. Great. Lovely. Get out. No, they have absolutely no regard for the human condition whatsoever. Ramadan is just Ramadan. It's nothing more. They fast. Okay, they can't eat during the day. They can eat before sunrise, and then they eat after sunset. During the day, they can't eat, they can't drink, they can't smoke, they can't even swear, can't do any of that stuff. But you know they actually get fatter during Ramadan because, yeah, every single night is a feast. It's like every single night is like Sunday dinner at mom's place. And we all know what Sunday dinner at mom's place is like. Yeah. Make room for dessert. Well, imagine that for 30 some odd days. Mm-hmm. And this Ramadan, it actually promotes more violation of women. There are some very nasty things within Ramadan that go on. Do you know, for example, that women, when they are traveling to Mecca for Ramadan, they have to be accompanied, well, of course, they always have to be accompanied by a male relative, but they literally have to be encircled by their relatives because you've seen what it looks like when they... when they're all going around the Kaaba, the black thing, the meteorite. They're all going around that and going around that and going around that. Well, the women have to be particularly careful because the men grope them. The men grope the women. And this is supposed to be during the holy month of Ramadan, and the women are still sexually assaulted. Another thing that women are exploited is traveler's marriage. Now, traveler's marriage is also referred to as misyar. That is when a man temporarily marries a woman. During the month of Ramadan, on their pilgrimage to Mecca, they temporarily marry women to have sex with them. These marriages can last anywhere from one day to 1 hour. And it's halal. They can do that. Now, Ramadan, it follows different times of the year because, well, they follow the lunar calendar because, like I say, they worship a moon god anyway. Why not, right? Whereas we follow the Gregorian calendar. But they really are nuts. I'm serious. And then you've got enablers in the White House, like Barack Hussein Obama, holding iftar dinners and going on air as stating that Thomas Jefferson hosted the first iftar dinner at the White House. Now that is a bald-faced lie. Thomas Jefferson did not host an iftar dinner ever. This is how it all started. Barack Obama and the ministers of propaganda in the mainstream media, and they repeat this ad nauseum, the utterly unfounded and spectacularly erroneous myth that Thomas Jefferson hosted the first iftar dinner at the White House, and he most certainly did not. In fact, the very first iftar dinner at the White House was held by George W. Bush, and this was a mere month after Muslims, inspired by the commands of Allah through his prophet, as preserved in the most holy Quran, obliterated 2,973 innocent people on 9/11. Yeah, President Bush, I was really let down by that one. He's the one who verbalized that Islam is a religion of peace. But actually, Muslims, they paid him for a chump. He was another useful, dimmy idiot to them. Now, Jefferson, he did host a temporary Muslim envoy for dinner. And that was in 1805 at the White House. And it did happen during Ramadan. Now, the envoy, he was celebrating his Muslimhood by requesting prostitutes as soon as he set foot on American soil. And he said, yeah, by the way, yeah, this guy, he wanted his prostitutes. Yeah, okay, get that out of the way. The envoy, I believe his name was Melly Melly. I'm just going on memory here. Yeah, this envoy came over because Jefferson wanted to have a little sit-down with him and ask him about the Barbary pirates. So he came over and, well, he wanted his women. Anyway, okay, Cal. He was celebrating Ramadan. Jefferson said, hey, look, come over, have supper, I want to talk to you. And the envoy said, sure, I can come over, but can it wait until after sunset? And Jefferson, he was just being polite. Now, the scheduled time for the dinner was 3:30 p.m. But the envoy said, no, can we hold it off a little bit? Jefferson was just being, like I say, polite. He courteously agreed. However, Jefferson did not change the menu to make the dinner halal or Muslim-friendly or anything of the sort. In fact, Jefferson was rather aggravated with this envoy and Muslims in general. And the whole reason this envoy was even in Washington, D.C., was because Muslim pirates had been raiding American ships for decades, plundering their cargo and selling captured sailors as slaves. And that's something else. Do you know that Muslims overall sold more people into slavery? 1 million. Than were involved in the entire history of the slave trade in the West. Where do you think we got our slaves from? The Muslims. Now, Jefferson, as president, he finally had enough of this foolishness. He was sick of the craven submissions of the U.S. to the Muslim thugs by paying them a tribute to leave their ships alone. So he decided to send the Marines into Tripoli. And in they went, inspiring the phrase in the Marine hymn, to the shores of Tripoli. That's right. Marines to this day, that's something very important, kids. Jefferson gave us the United States Marines. Now, to this day, Marines, they're called leathernecks. Because back then, they would wrap thick strips of leather around their necks before the attacks because they knew that this holy prophet Muhammad, peace be spit upon him, would command his loyal followers to slice the heads off every infidel they could find. Now, there are so many misguided leftists out there, including President Barack Hussein Obozo. He mindlessly he celebrates the fact that Jefferson owned a copy of the Quran. You know why Jefferson owned a copy of the Quran? Because he wanted to understand the mindset of the Islamists. That's why Jefferson had a copy of the Quran. He wanted to read it and understand the enemy. And we know that Quran is still in the White House. As a matter of fact, the first Muslim congressman, Keith Ellison of Minnesota, he used Jefferson's Koran to copy, Jefferson's copy of the Koran as part of his swearing-in ritual when he took oath of office. But like I say, he purchased this Koran not to celebrate the cultural richness of Islam, but like I say, to figure out why Muslims were determined against all principles of humanity in general and in Christianity in particular to rape and pillage innocent Christians who had done them no harm whatsoever. Something else you should know too is that that copy that Jefferson had, it's not a holy Koran because it's translated into English. That's something else. Only Korans in the original, all abridged Arabic, are considered holy. So if you have a Koran in your house in English or in Korean, guess what? It's not a holy Koran because it's not text in Arabic. Now, Jefferson, this is interesting. Jefferson, along with John Adams, they had gone to London in 1786 to have a sit-down with the Muslim ambassador who represented the Barbary Pirates of Tripoli. They asked him a simple and direct question. By what right do you extort money from us and enslave us? And this is Jefferson's report to the Congress from the ambassador. The right was founded upon the laws of the Prophet, that it's written in their Koran that all nations who should not have answered their authority were sinners, that it was their right and duty to make war upon them wherever they could be found, and to make slaves of all they could take as prisoners, and that every Muslim man who should be slain in battle was sure to go to paradise. That's why Jefferson bought a copy. And he found it hard to believe that any religion could be as dark, as dangerous, as evil, and as wicked as this one. So he definitely had to check it out for himself. So he reads his own copy of the Koran. And he reads the command of Allah through his holy prophet, peace be upon him, slay the idolaters wherever you find them, arrest them, besiege them, and lie in ambush everywhere for them, and that is Sirah 9.5. Now, Jefferson, as president, he finally got to the place where he had it up to here with paying the extortion money. Paying extortion money to Islamic pirates and murderers. He finally ordered a blockade of Tripoli. Now, the USS Constitution, they captured a number of Muslim vessels who were trying to run the blockade. Jefferson's dinner guest, like I said, I think his name was Meli. He had been sent by the Bay of Tripoli in an effort to get the ships back. So the purpose of the dinner was not for Jefferson to celebrate the multicultural marvels of this benighted religion, but to inform this ambassador that Americans were done being played for saps, and from now on, we're going to play hard cheese with Muslim pirates, murderers, enslavers, and rapists, whether they be inspired by their holy Koran or not. Now, the bottom line is, prior to 2001, the only White House tradition when it came to iftar dinners was not to have them. Let's hope that a day comes when that tradition is resumed. Okay, time is really flying here. I don't believe this. I want to share with you a very short clip about the Kaaba, that big black thing, the thing in Mecca, the one all those people run around. I have a clip here. I'm going to bring it up. Let me see. And I put it somewhere. Oh, I've got it here. This is somebody talking about the black stone from Mecca and where did it come from. Hold on one sec. Let me see. Here we are.
Meteorites have been found in tombs and ancient catacombs. A curious rock of unknown origin is enshrined in Mecca, Because of its dark appearance and unusual texture, some have speculated that the black stone of the Kaaba, towards which faithful Muslims face to pray five times each day, might be a meteorite. It is said that this once white stone was given to Adam upon his expulsion from paradise, but that it has turned black by absorbing the sins of pilgrims who touch and kiss it. Because the rock is revered, it has never been tested to prove if it is meteoritic. Meteorites may have been worked into weapons and worshipped on altars, but the phenomenon that produces shooting stars was often understood as a sign from the gods.
Okay, I found that kind of interesting. Didn't like the way it ended. But yeah, there are theories out there that the Kaaba is actually a meteorite. They've tried to figure out what on earth this thing is for ages. It is a rather odd thing to find in the middle of the desert, don't you think? Did it fall from the sky? I think it did. And I love the idea because this means they're worshiping something that fell out of space. Islam. You just slay me. You laugh. You make me laugh. The thing is, though, you really do have to understand that Ramadan is not a peaceful holy holiday. There are a lot of activities that go on within that month. They seem to exacerbate because I don't know if they're just cranky because they're not eating during the day. I don't know what it is, but crime rates do go up. Now, there are a lot of people out there that say, no, crime rates actually lower. Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe tribal wars are put on hold for a month, but they pick up again, that sort of thing. Yeah, that's why crime rates are going down. Yeah, opposition, opposition sectors of Islam. Yeah, maybe they put down the swords for a little bit, but you know what? The Shia and the Sunni, they'll be back at it again, and they actually do go at it anyway. There's more rapes, there's more robbery, there's more infraction. An old man getting beaten up because he was eating during the day, during Ramadan. There are Ramadan pardons, however, and this is kind of good news. Thieves are pardoned, which means perhaps their hand will not be cut off. Ramadan is supposed to be a celebration of humility and the offer of alms to those less fortunate. But they don't. What about the starving children in Africa that they create, North Africa? Are they helping those children? No. So when you open up your daily and you see your mayor sitting around an iftar table, you think about that. Personally, Islam is a fake. Islam is God's sick joke and one big test on the world populace. I feel really sorry for Muslims who got sucked into this cult. And that's what it is. It's a cult. It's a cult that will never be reformed, ever. And these people stuck under it, especially the women. Islam is evil. That's all it is. Don't be fooled by this month of Ramadan and how they try to convince us that it is a month of quiet observation, celebration, and alms, because it's not. Not by a long shot. It's unbelievable what they are capable of doing. Look at what the Taliban is up to. the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, bent on destroying us in the West. But I want to focus on the Taliban just for a little bit, because I got something here you might find rather interesting. The Taliban ideology, they do everything in the name of Islam. They eat, they drink, they sleep, and murder, according to the dictates of Sharia. They target anyone non-Muslim, according to their strict definitions of Islam. Little girls like Malala Yousafzai, she's the young advocate for girls' education. You remember her, the one from Pakistan who was shot in the head for wanting an education. She was not spared from the Taliban rage. Now they're running around, and they're killing foreign climbers in Pakistan. There was one Chinese climber, he managed to escape. We nearly lost a Canadian during that expedition because she withdrew from the climb just hours before the attack. That's right. 9 foreign climbers in Pakistan were slaughtered by the Taliban. This slaughter, it took place at the base camp for Nanga Barak Peak. And I better say that properly. Nanga Parbat Peak. My apologies. Now, according to the report, at least 15 Taliban dressed as police ordered the mountaineers out, and then they shot them. Now, Nanga Parbat, that's an imposing peak. You can see it. It's at the foot of the Himalayas. You can see it at the foot of the Himalayas on a clear day. Has a snowy summit. Now, the reason behind this attack, Taliban spokesman Ansula Eshan, he asserted that this was revenge for drone attacks that recently killed their second in command. But it didn't matter to them that the 2 Chinese nationals and 1 Slovak, 1 Lithuanian, 1 Nepali, 3 Ukrainians, and 1 Chinese American had nothing to do with those attacks. Such an inhumanity, it's beyond comprehension. Now, the Taliban, we know, they belong to the 7th century. The world was smaller, communities more isolated, and people could not perceive each other outside religious and tribal identities. We know that. We understand that. But they have not left the 7th century. The Taliban, they believe they possess the one true faith, and they assess anyone they encounter is either saved or damned. Something else, too. Did you know we're all Muslim? Yeah. Do you know that we were born Muslim, every single one of us on the planet? But as babies, we were snatched by the infidel and raised as Jews, or Christians, or Buddhists. When you hear the word convert, for example, that guy converted to Islam. No, he didn't convert. According to Islam, he reverted back to his or her true state. Yeah, that's Islam. They can't even leave us alone to find our own faith destinies, can't they? Anyone who is not a Muslim can be killed because Sharia defines truth and ethics. That's Sharia law. I'm telling you. It goes on and on. I could sit here and I could talk to you guys for 24/7 about the atrocities of Islam. But unfortunately, I have to eat my supper and I have to sleep at night. But the list goes on. Now, of course, you're going to hear the argument out there, well, that's not Islam. Yeah, it is, because it's in your Sharia. And this is why, although I feel sorry for Muslims, I don't trust them. If you're a Muslim, I'm sorry, unless you renounce your religion, I cannot trust you, because you never know whether or not a Muslim is an Islamist, like the Joker. They walk amongst us. We don't know who they are. They're nice to you in your corner store. They're polite to you. But what happens when the numbers grow? What will they do when their populace starts to reach higher numbers? Will that Muslim at the corner store be as friendly? Don't bank on it. Because as a Muslim, he or she are required to follow the dictates of Sharia law. This is what I am trying to tell you. Sharia law has to be formally abolished. People ask me, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, all I can do is use my voice. That's all I have. All I can do is to hope to reach one ear and let them know that Islam is a global threat. That's all I can do. I can sit here behind my mic. I can't march. No. I can't. I don't belong to any organization where they go on rallies and they march. We don't have that sort of thing where I am. If we did, I would participate. However, I wouldn't get tanked up before I attended a rally. But that's neither here nor there. But I can sit here and I can tell you what Islam is and what Islam represents. Islam is pure, unadulterated evil. And if we allow organizations like the Council of American Islamic Relations or the Muslim Student Associations in our children's universities to thrive, to continue down the road, we are going to face grievous issues with Islam. We are seeing that right now. Islam as well, they're butting in our business. They're trying to mess with our constitution. You've all heard me talk about how our then Premier Dalton McGuinty entertained the idea of Sharia family court in Ontario. That got beaten down pretty darn quick. We can't put up with it. Enough is enough. And people like Daniel Pipes, who I think is nothing but a big sellout, saying that he respects Islam. You got to be kidding me. This guy's been studying Islam, I don't know, for a couple of decades, easily. And Daniel Pipes is now declaring that he respects Islam? Really? There are Muslims out there who think there is a reformation to be found within Islam. I say no, there's not. Islam has to be eradicated. You got Dr. Zudi Jasser. He is a Muslim. He believes in the Reformation. Dr. Zudig answered, no, there is no such thing as Reformation in Islam. Two things have to happen for that to occur, and believe me, these are not going to happen in my lifetime. One, ban the Quran as hate literature. Two, declare Sharia law illegal. Those two things will have to happen before I even start to listen to the likes of Jasser, Tariq Fatah, and others who are trying to reform this cult of Islam. Those two things, if they can accomplish those two things, then maybe I'll start lending my ear. But until that happens, my opinion is Islam is evil. Islam was unleashed upon this planet by a lunatic named Muhammad. And he got 1.6 billion people to follow him along for the ride. Those poor Muslims. I've even lost respect for the Ahmadi Muslims. There was an Ahmadi who said that despite the fact that we are not allowed to travel to Mecca, we still believe in the message of love, hope, peace, and charity of our Prophet Muhammad, for goodness sake. So you know what? Now the Ahmadis are out. I was giving the Ahmadis a bit of a free pass, but no, I read that. Okay, see ya. You're on my big F list too. You and the Shia and the Sunni. All you crazy imams. You wacky, wacky people. So that's it. Oh, my gosh. You know what? I'm nearly out of time. So I'm just going to wrap it up by saying, look, you know, just educate yourself. Listen to these programs. You know, listen to Radio Jihad Network. As a matter of fact, there's a show tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time with Vito Esposito, Mamma Mia, No Sharia, right here on Block Talk Radio. Try to be there and listen to that. Visit my blog. Like I say, I'll have this article up there for you around 4:30, 5 o'clock. Well, it's already 4:30. Give me until 6, and I'll have it up there for you. RedFoxBlogger.blogspot.com. And remember, you know, my hours have changed around. Of course, I'm regular Mondays, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Fridays. So just thought I'd make a note of that. But I do want to bring you a programming note. We have a new member in the Red Fox Blogger family, and that is Randy L. Noble. He has a show called The Cross in the Desert, and you can hear it right here on Blog Talk Radio. He is categorized under religion. He is a Christian, and he works with Iranians who are trying to escape the clutches of Islam. This man puts his neck out there every single day trying to save another life. His next show is going to be August 4th, and I believe, if I'm correct, it will be 7 p.m. Eastern Time. There you go. No, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. My apologies. So try to check that out. The Cross in the Desert, August 4th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, for Randy L. Noble and for what he's doing for the people, the Christians in Iran. Guys, I really appreciate you joining me today. I haven't even gone into the chat. I went into the chat to say hello. And there's Vito. And, oh, his ears must have been burning. Oh, well, there you go. Like I say, though, you guys are awesome. I want to thank you very much. And like I say, I'm very proud to be a voice of the infidel, because I am the infidel. And Islam, infidels are watching you. So you watch out for that. Because we're on to you. We're coming to you. We'll be right there Don't even try to bust any funny moves on us anymore because we've had it. We're fed up. You know what? These are our countries, and we're taking them back. So watch out, Islam. Everybody, have a wonderful day. I will see you on Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I want to thank everybody once again for listening, joining me in the chat room, joining me in other listening devices, and those who listen in archives. This is Kel Fritzy of the Red Fox Blogger. Infidels are watching. Signing out. Bye-bye.